You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Gary Renard. Gary Renard underwent a powerful spiritual awakening in the early 1990s. As instructed by two ascended masters, he wrote his first best-selling book, The Disappearance of the Universe, over a period of 9 years. He was later guided to speak in public. Gary has spoken in 41 states and 16 countries. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Now, could you tell us about Artin and Persa?
Artin and Persa are the two teachers in my books, The Disappearance of the Universe and Your Immortal Reality. And I had a great time a couple of weeks ago talking about them at the ARE there. We did a two-day workshop, and it was a lot of fun. There's a lot of interest in the books around the world, and especially in Artin and Persa. And the way this really started was back in Maine, when I was living in Maine back at the end of 1992, and I'd been meditating, and I opened my eyes, and there were two people sitting there on my living room couch, and they looked very real. You know, they didn't look like spirit guides or light beings or, you know, kind of like, you know, these people with all these glowing colors around them. Or anything, looked very much like real people, except they were very good looking. This beautiful woman was sitting there, and some guy, I didn't care too much about him, but they were good looking people, and they seemed real. Eventually, as time went on, they let me touch them. So, for all intents and purposes, they were like real bodies.
Hmm.
Now, looking back on it, I can, you know, understand what they really are a little bit more, because they still appear to me. After all these years, it's been just about 18 years now. And the first book, The Disappearance of the Universe, takes place over a period of about 9 years, from the end of 1992 to the end of 2001, just after 9/11. And it's very interesting because they gave me a series of teachings. They appeared to me 17 times for that first book.
Hmm.
And they explained that they were ascended masters, which I didn't really know very much about at the time, even though I had been on a spiritual path at that point for about 14 years, and I'd gotten very good at meditation and learned a lot. I still had a lot to learn, and they taught me a great deal of information, and it turned out to be very experiential, because it turns out that it's not really what you know, it's what you do with what you know. All the spiritual knowledge in the world will not do you any good if you don't apply it to your everyday life.
Oh, yes.
And that's kind of like where the rubber meets the road, and that's what they emphasized. So they said that they were ascended masters. They said that they had already ascended. Religion may be a great social institution, but I personally believe that spirituality is personal, that it is something that's done between you and the Holy Spirit, or you and Jesus, or you and the Tao, or whatever you want to call it. But whatever it is, reality is perfect and cannot change or be changed. It's a constant, like the Tao is a constant, which I learned back when I used to meditate, because, well, what is the Tao? The Tao is absolute stillness. And the reason that it's absolute stillness is because it's already perfect. It's not changing, it's not shifting, it's not evolving. If it was evolving, then it wouldn't be perfect. It would be trying to become perfect. So reality is a constant awakening that is enlightenment. That's what Buddha meant. He said, I am awake. You know, most people, they interpret that to mean, well, he was more awake in the dream. He was more alert. He was more aware of the dream, but that's not really what he meant. He didn't mean that he was more awake in the dream. He meant that he'd awakened from the dream. And that's not just a minor distinction, because it means that he awakened from all of it, from all illusions, completely awakened from the universe of time and space, and progressed to a reality that is beyond the universe of time and space, beyond everything we see. And it's not something that you can see with the body's eyes anyway, but it is something that can be experienced. Spirit is what we really are. It's our reality. It's something that is perfect. And the good news about that is that you don't have to struggle to be perfect. You already are. What you really are is already exactly the same as your source, which is God. So you don't have to do anything about that. All that you have to do, according to the Course, and also Buddhism, by the way, all that you have to do is undo. All that you have to do is undo the false you, and that's what the disciplines have called the ego. You could think of the ego as being the idea of separation. The idea that we have separated ourselves from our source, that we have separated ourselves from God and taken on this personal existence, this individual identity that is somehow different or separate from its source. That's the ego. That's the false us. And what the Course teaches us how to do and what Jesus was teaching people how to do 2,000 years ago was to undo the ego. And the brilliance of that approach is that if you undo the false you, which is the ego, and if you eventually finish the job, then eventually the real you will be all that's left. And the real you is already perfect. And that can be experienced even while we appear to be walking around here as bodies. You know, we can be sitting down in our living room and all of a sudden have this experience that may only last for a second or two at first. But what it is an awakening that is temporary. But what this is the great mystical experience that the masters of history have talked about and written about for thousands of years. It's the actual experience of being one with your source, which is God. Everything kind of like temporarily disappears. It doesn't matter, even if it's just for a second or two, the body may appear to disappear, the world may appear to disappear, and all that's left is this experience, this awareness of perfect oneness. And that experience is beyond this world, and anybody can have it. Anybody can have this experience, and the best way to facilitate that experience is to undo the ego through the kind of discipline that the Course would call forgiveness. This is not the way that most people think about forgiveness. Most people think about forgiveness, they're coming from a place of being at the effect of the world. So they think that the world is being done to them. That's the way that people go through life. It looks like the world is coming at them and it's being done to them. That makes you a victim because now you have to react to it and it's real. And that's how most people go through life. But one thing the great masters understood was that the world was not being done to them. It was actually being done by them. It was not coming at them, which puts you in a reactionary state of mind and makes the whole thing real, which means that forgiveness is not justified, not really, and because they really did it. And anger is justified. That's the way that most people live their lives. And the world was not being done to them. It was being done by them. It was actually coming from them. Now, that changes everything. Because if the world is coming from you, if what you're seeing is a projection that is actually coming from you, like a hologram, then everything in it was put there by you, which means that forgiveness is justified. Why? Because you're the one who made it up in the first place. You're the one who wanted it to be that way for a particular reason, and you made up the whole hologram. And what that means is that now forgiveness is justified because you're not a victim. As the Course says, I am not a victim of the world I see. And so now forgiveness is justified, and as the Course also teaches, anger is never justified. It doesn't say that you'll never get angry. I can pretty much guarantee you that you will. But the point is it's never justified. Why? Because you're the one who did it. And when you remember that, now you're coming from a place of cause instead of effect. An analogy I like to use in my workshops, because well, I've been in the ARE, I think, five times now over the years. I spoke a few years ago at the ARE, and you had Ken Wapnick, and you know, you had Charles Thomas Casey, and they gave a presentation, and then I gave a presentation at the end. There's a short analogy that I like to use because I like to go to the movies. You know, that's kind of like my habit, and people who read my books, they know that. And I go in there, and the lights go down, and the picture comes on the screen, and my attention is diverted to the screen. You know, so I might get into the story. I might even, you know, get emotional. I might even talk to the screen. I might even say, no, no, don't go there, and, you know, and really get into it. And I forget that it's not real. And The only thing is, let's say that I wanted to change what was on that screen. Well, it's not going to do me a lot of good to go up and mess around with the screen, because there's not really anything happening there. It's a trick. It's an illusion. It's a sleight of hand. You know, I've been fooled into paying attention to the screen. And even if I did mess around with the screen, well, maybe I could, you know, temporarily change a little bit what it looks like, but that's only going to last very temporarily. And it just goes along, you know, as it would, because if I really wanted to change what's on that screen, I would have to remember something. There's this projector, and the projector is hidden in the back, and I'm not supposed to think about that. But if I really wanted to change what was on that screen in a permanent and meaningful way, then I would have to find that projector, and I would have to change what's in the projector. Now, if I change what's in the projector, I would be dealing with the cause instead of the effect. And the irony is that if you change what's in the projector, well, the screen will change too. But that's not the focus anymore.
We'll be right back with more with Gary Renard on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Gary Renard.
And the irony is that if you change what's in the projector, well, the screen will change too. But that's not the focus anymore. The focus has changed from the effect, which will take care of itself, and you're going to a position of cause, which now puts you in a position of power, because now you can do something about it that can actually work instead of fooling around with things temporarily that will never work except temporarily. Mm-hmm. And so now you're dealing with a kind of like a permanent fix instead of a temporary fix, and that's really the difference between reality and illusions. And what the Course does is it takes you to a position of cause where you remember that you're the one that made the whole thing up. And the kind of forgiveness that I'm talking about remembers that. And there are really three simple components to it. And they're explained in detail in my books, which anybody can get. If they want to find out more about my books, they can just go to my website, which is www.garyrenard.com.
And that's, are those in The Disappearance of the Universe or Your Immortal Reality?
Both, actually.
Oh.
You could read either book. The second one is a continuation of the first. Dark and Cursor are also the teachers in the second book. Most people read the first book first, and I think that's the best way. But I've also talked to plenty of people around the world who have read the second book. And because the truth is holographic, which means that, you know, with these kinds of teachings, you will find the truth in every section. You'll see it repeated in a different way in every section of the book, which is important, because what happens is you keep getting it on deeper and deeper levels. And that is kind of like an indication of the ego being undone, because as your ego is undone by practicing this kind of forgiveness, you see things differently. So even if you're reading something that you've already read before in these particular kinds of books, because they are holographic, then you may be reading a paragraph and you know that you've read it before, but now you see it in a different way. It's not that the words have changed. It's that you've changed. It's that now you're seeing it from a different place, from a different perspective. So it's like, wow, you know, I never really got that before. I never really saw that before this way. And it's really exciting, because now you're starting to see the world in a different way. You're starting to interpret it differently. And it's an exciting spiritual path. It leads to peace. You don't have to wait forever to experience that. You'll have, you know, moments of peace that are beyond this world. And at the same time, as you go along practicing this kind of forgiveness and the ego is undone, your experience will start to change from the experience of being a body, which is separate from other people and from God. And your experience will start to change from that of being a body to that of being spirit, which is something that is immortal. It's invulnerable. It's eternal. It's something that can't be touched by anything in this world. It's something that can't be threatened by anything in this world. Nothing real can be threatened. That's what it's talking about. It's talking about this spirit that is perfect and untouchable, and it's perfect oneness. And you start to kind of gradually shift over to that experience. In a way, it's like a caterpillar going through a cocoon process in order to become a butterfly, which is a higher life form, a less restricted life form, and more free. That's kind of like what this is like. It takes time to go through that cocoon process, but it's worth it because while you're going through it, it's more fun and it's a higher quality of life than what most people experience, which is a reactionary kind of life full of problems and full of suffering and full of pain. And what this is about is the alleviation of pain and the end of suffering. So, we think our problems are very important, but how important would they be if there was no pain and no suffering associated with them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they wouldn't be problems at all, because it's not really the problem that's the problem. It's the pain.
Oh, yes.
It's the suffering that is the problem. If you take that away, and of course, Buddhist masters know this, but if you take the suffering and the pain away, then there is no problem. So that's the difference between dealing with the cause and dealing with the effect. Most people will try to solve their problems out there on the screen. You know, so they think that the problem is out there on the screen. The problem is they don't have enough money, or they don't have enough of this or enough of that, or their body gets sick or something like that, and they think that the problem is out there on the screen. And if the problem is out there on the screen, well, then the answer must be out there on the screen. And if the answer is out there on the screen, then the truth must be out there. It's like the X-Files, the truth is out there. The truth is not really out there.
So you're looking at the cause. I was thinking, while you're talking about this, this reminds me of how we treat medical problems. A lot of times we treat the symptoms rather than looking for the cause.
Yes.
Interesting.
Absolutely. There's this chapter in The Disappearance of the Universe called Healing the Sick that talks about the same thing. And, we're looking at the body. For example, people feel pain in the body. Well, they think that the pain is in the body. But actually, the body itself is a part of the same projection as everything else that we're looking at. We just think that this body that we see in the mirror, or this body that we see when we hold our hand up in front of our face, we think that that's really us. You know, we think that we're actually in the body. But all it is a part of the same projection as the rest of it. It just is part of the trick. It's like an illusion, because it looks closer to us, and we think that we're inside it, when the truth is we were never inside of the body. The body is being projected by the mind, because that projector is hidden in the unconscious mind. That's where the projector is coming from. That's where the projection is coming from. That's where the projector is hidden. And we're viewing that projection with the conscious mind. So the mind is split, and then we experience it as though it's real. My teacher, Persa, in that chapter, Healing the Sick, she said something very important. She said, pain is not a physical process. It's a mental process. So we experience the pain as though it's in the body, because we're so connected to the projection. It's almost like we fused with the ego and came to confuse ourselves with the ego. That's also the Buddhist definition of ego. When the being comes to confuse itself with the mind, or whatever the mind identifies itself to be. Most people identify themselves with their bodies and what they think they are doing with that body. So most people, out there, they'll think, well, I'm really a doctor, or I'm really a race car driver, something like that. And they think that that's who they are and what they are, and of course that's not what they are at all. But they've come to confuse themselves for being that, and when the body gets sick, they think that they are a body, and so that they're sick. And the body is actually just a projection. The pain that they're feeling is not in the body, it's actually in the mind, which is why Persa said pain is a mental process, not a physical process. And if it's in the mind, well, then you could change your mind about it. And you could realize, well, look, this is just the body and the ego trying to convince me that I'm separate. The ego is the thought of separation, and everything, including the body, is based on the idea of separation. And the ego's number one game plan, because there's something we don't know about the ego likes this idea of separation. The ego wants to keep it going because it feels special to the ego. It feels important to have an individual existence and a personal identity. Look at how much pride that people take in their individual accomplishments and things that they do in their lives. And so the ego likes this. And the ego wants to convince us that we're a body, and that's the ego's number one game plan. You know, so now the body is telling us what to feel. And that's what the ego wants. The ego wants to convince us that we're a body, that the pain is in the body. The body is telling us what to feel, which is kind of like the tail wagging the dog. And it should be the other way around. We should be able to tell our body what to feel or not feel, because the body is a projection that is coming from our mind. Everything in it, including pain, is coming from our mind. So that's where it has to be dealt with. You know, there have always been yogis and spiritually accomplished people who could shut off pain to their body. That pain is actually a function of this ontological guilt that is in your mind that you're not aware of because it's unconscious. It's there in the unconscious mind. You know, you may experience it in the conscious mind as well, but the source of it is in the projector, in the unconscious mind, and it can be traced all the way back to this original idea of being separate from our source and losing God, losing our source. We're upset because we think that, I'm not going to have enough money for my retirement, or, the terrorists are going to blow up my airplane or whatever. I think that that's why I'm upset. But that's not why I'm upset at all, because the real reason that I'm upset can be traced all the way back to that original separation, that original guilt. And by undoing the ego, you undo that whole experience of separation and eventually get that back to your experience of oneness, which eliminates the cause. So one way of looking at it is this idea of scarcity, which so many people are experiencing right now in our society. And, they experience scarcity, and they don't realize that the scarcity isn't out there on the screen or in their bank account like they think it is. That scarcity is actually in the mind and can be traced back to this original idea of separation. A sense of separation from God is the only lack you really need correct. And if you could correct that one real lack, which is this sense of separation from your source, then you would never feel lack. You would never feel scarcity. You would only feel abundance, no matter what happened, whether you had any money or not. You would still feel abundant, and it wouldn't be dependent on the circumstances. It wouldn't be dependent on what's going on, because there are certainly people who have plenty of money who are still coming from a place of lack and still coming from a place of scarcity and still are afraid of losing everything. And so that's not real abundance, because it's not in the mind. It's dependent on outside forces.
But yes, that's similar. There are a lot of people, when they get a lot of possessions and they get all that they can, I guess, hold, they realize there's something more that they can't buy, and that could be frustrating.
Yeah, I'm sure it can be very frustrating. And, it's funny, too, because my parents, they felt very guilty because they didn't have any money. You know, they always struggled their whole lives, and they felt guilty about that. Since I moved to California here, I've met billionaires who feel very guilty because they have so much money. And it's like you can't win.
We'll be right back with more with Gary Renard on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Gary Renard.
You're going to feel guilty if you don't have any money. You're going to feel guilty if you have all this money. And that's because we have to realize, first of all, that neither one is true. These are all temporary things, as the Buddhists call it, impermanence. None of it lasts, so none of it's important. None of it's worth really worrying about. And the place that we want to get to in our experience is this place of constancy, which is not dependent on outside forces. And I really think that spiritual experience is the only thing that will ever make people happy. I do question and answer sessions in my workshops, and people ask some pretty heavy questions. You know, how did I get here? And I'll say, you're not here. You're not really here. And they'll say, yeah, I know, but how did I get here? The real answer to our most difficult questions in life is going to come to us not in the form of words. The real answer to everything is going to come to us in the form of an experience of what we really are and where we really are, perfect oneness with our source, and it's that experience that is the answer. The reason that it's the experience that is the answer is because, as I said earlier, that's like an awakening. It may be very brief at first, but it's just like a sneak preview. It's like you're actually experiencing what your reality is going to be forever. Eventually, that experience will be your reality forever when you've completed all of your forgiveness lessons and undone the ego, all at once and in completely, then that experience will be your reality forever. But you get like a glimpse of it. You get like an actual experience of it. And because it is actually an awakening, whether it's brief or not, it's an awakening. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is all that's left in that awakening is the answer. I mentioned that the body temporarily disappears. It's not there. The world isn't there. There's just this perfect oneness with God. And that is the answer. And the interesting thing about experiencing the answer is that in the answer, all of the questions disappear. There are no questions in that answer, which is why the Course describes it as the complete but temporary suspension of doubt and fear. There's literally no doubt at all, no fear at all, no question at all in the answer. So it turns out that we are dreaming our questions, that our questions only exist within the dream of time and space. The truth is something that you awaken to, which has nothing to do with the universe of time and space, because the universe of time and space is temporary, and the truth is constant. That's the difference between reality and illusion. Whatever is true is eternal and cannot change or be changed. That narrows it down a little, and it's also why the Tao was absolute stillness, because it was absolutely perfect, so it doesn't really matter in the end what you call it, because once you awaken to reality, there are no words, because there are no lips to speak them with, because there is no body. The body disappears, and what's left is this perfect oneness, and this perfect oneness is an experience that is greater than the universe of time and space. It's something that actually blows away the universe of time and space. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't enjoy the universe of time and space, or that you shouldn't enjoy the body, or that you shouldn't have relationships. One thing we have to realize is that our unconscious mind, where this projection is coming from, actually knows everything. There's not one piece of information in the universe of time and space that your unconscious mind is not aware of. Your unconscious mind knows everything. And one of the things that it knows is that there's really just one of us. We look out and we see, you know, 6.5 billion people, what the Hindus would call the world of multiplicity, which is actually illusion. But your unconscious mind, even though with the conscious mind we see this projection and we see that 6.5 billion people out there, the unconscious mind knows that there's really just one of us. There's just one ego appearing as many. There's just one of us that thinks that it's here. Guess what? You're it, not somebody else. There isn't anybody else. We've been tricked by this thing called the ego. We said that, you know, image on the screen in a movie theater is a trick. It's an illusion. It's not really there. It's a very convincing illusion because it's holographics. It's third dimensional. You can feel it. You can taste it. You can touch it. So it seems very real, and yet, 100 years from now, they're going to have movies that can do the same thing. I mean, they already have the technology where you can feel things that aren't there. They even train surgeons and, you know, do experiments at MIT where you can actually feel things that don't exist, which is simply mimicking what the unconscious mind does anyway. And, 100 years from now, they'll have these movies that you can walk into that seem just as real as this life that we appear to be living. You'll be able to see people, interact with them, feel them, touch them. Imagine the temptation to act out fantasies and to keep coming back for more, which is right up the ego's alley. And, it'll get to the point where people won't know what the real illusion is and what the phony illusion is. But, it's all a trick. And what the Course does is it says, yes, this illusion that you're looking at may seem very real to your body, but it's possible to change that experience. It's possible to gradually change that experience to the experience of being spirit. And what happens is, as you go along, is that maybe your body will start to feel lighter. Maybe it'll start to feel more elastic, kind of like the figure in a dream, which is what it really is anyway. Maybe it'll become harder for it to feel pain. Maybe it'll be more difficult to hurt it. The guiltless mind cannot suffer. What that means is that if you had absolutely no unconscious guilt in your mind, which can be traced all the way back to the original separation, then it would literally be impossible for you to feel any physical pain. The fastest way to undo the ego is through this kind of forgiveness that puts two and two together, because we've already said that your unconscious mind knows everything. One of the things that it knows is that there's really just one of us. So what that means is that your unconscious mind will interpret anything that you think about the world, anything that you think about another person, to actually be about you. Because there's really just one of us, and your unconscious mind doesn't recognize illusions. Your unconscious mind knows the truth, and it knows that there's really just one of us. So to kind of like bring that down to everyday street level, you know, let's say that I'm driving here on the freeway in L.A., and somebody cuts me off in traffic, and I curse at that person. I go, ah, that, and I'm angry. Hmm. Well, without realizing it, I just called myself, because my unconscious mind will interpret that to be a message from me to me about me, because there's really just one of us.
Oh, yes, I was actually going to, I was going to ask you a question about, you know, anger flaring up while driving.
Yeah, that, because it happens so often. You know, cars really bring out the best in us, guys.
Oh, yes.
You know, we're really at our best behavior when we're out on the road there. And, you know, so that's right up the ego's alley, too, because it wants you to react. It wants you to kind of, like, make it real. And the second that you do, it makes the whole ego thought system real, because it means that if it's real, then you're a body, and what you're looking at is true, which means other bodies are real, and it just keeps the whole thing going in the unconscious mind. And the way out is really three steps. The first thing is to stop yourself. Now, that may be the hardest part of doing this. Mm-hmm. And it takes some discipline, which is why the course has a workbook, because this does take some work. That's why it's called a workbook. And I think the mind has to be trained. At one point, well, actually at the beginning, the workbook says that an untrained mind can accomplish nothing. Mm. And what that means is that you have to discipline the mind so that it won't react to what the ego is showing us. It won't react to the projection, and instead will interpret that projection with reality, which in, you know, the mind is actually the Holy Spirit. So now, instead of just having the ego in the mind, you can remember that you also have the Holy Spirit in the mind, which is telling you something completely different. And if you stop yourself from reacting to what you're seeing, now you can take the second step. Now you can switch over to thinking with the Holy Spirit instead of thinking with the ego. Well, you know, actually what you're seeing is not true. It's a projection that is coming from you. You made it up, which means that you don't have to be afraid of it. You're totally safe. Nothing in your hologram can hurt you or harm you unless you give it permission to. So if we go through life being hurt by other people or being upset by other people, it's because we've given them permission to hurt us. We have given them their effects. But if you reverse that, as the Course says, you know, the thinking of the world must be reversed. So if you reverse that, then you can kind of like see that it's coming from you, the way the Course puts it, you know, but who reacts to figures in a dream unless he sees them as if they were real? You know, the instant that he sees them as they really are, he has no need to react to it, because he understands that he gave them their effects, you know, by causing them and making them seem real. So now you're kind of like looking at the world in a totally opposite way. Instead of it coming at you, which puts you at the effect, and as long as you forget that you're at cause, you are at the effect. But when you remember that you're at cause, well, now you can be at cause, and you can understand that you can forgive this, not because these people out there really did something, but because they haven't really done anything, because you're the one who made them up in the first place. And then you can take the third step, which is so important. The Course says that the ego sees differences. You know, the ego sees all these different bodies, and that's perfect for the ego, because, you know, how can you have judgment without differences?
We'll be right back with more with Gary Renard on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Gary Renard.
The ego sees differences. You know, the ego sees all these different bodies, and that's perfect for the ego, because, you know, how can you have judgment without differences? And the ego wants you to judge and react, which keeps you thinking that you're a body, which keeps the ego going. And the Holy Spirit says, no, there's nothing to judge. There's nothing to react.
Wow. And, well, we're actually about out of time.
Yeah.
That's a lot to think about. Do you have a closing thought?
We have to remember, and this is a very important law of the mind, it says, as you see him, you will see yourself. So what you need to do is get control of the way that you think about other people, overlook the body, look past the veil, as the Course puts it, and think about that person as being nothing less than God, exactly the same as God, not just part of it, but all of it.
Wow. And people can learn more from your books, The Disappearance of the Universe and Your Immortal Reality.
That's right. And they can go to GaryRenard.com and has all the information there, plus a lot of other things.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure. I always love coming to Virginia Beach and working with the ARE, and I'm sure I'll be back.
And now we're going to have a glimpse at a conference at the ARE. Last weekend was the UFO conference. My wife, Allison Ray, went there and got someone's impression of the conference.
This is Allison Ray, and I'm here talking with Mary Ann Borden. And Mary Ann, what brought you to the UFO conference this weekend?
Well, I've actually jokingly referring it to it as the UFO conference. I don't know why. It's because I know very little about UFOs and crop circles and orbs. And now I am so interested and curious and want to pursue more. I think Freddie Silva was excellent. That's not even a word to describe him. He was humorous. He relayed the material very well. And he had has a personal vested interest in it, which I appreciate from any and all the speakers. And anytime there's an opportunity to attend a conference at ARE, I'm in. And I'm just so grateful for these opportunities that I do drive all the way down from New Jersey, which isn't that far away. So, yes, more about orbs. I'm going to start looking for them in my photographs and just be more aware of their presence and maybe call them into being.
Now, is there anything that you do once you get back home after a conference to kind of process the material or to help work through it? Is there anything that you want to share?
Well, actually, I have this wonderful friend who works in the hospital building. Her name is Allison Ray. And if I have any questions or if I want to share something, whether it's about glittery objects or a conference, I know I can always email Allison. And she always gets back to me very promptly. And she's a great friend, and I'm so grateful for our friendship.
Thank you so much.
And now it's time for an update on the conferences going on at the ARE. From December 29th to the 31st, Spiritual Resolutions, Keeping Our Soul's Promises. It's the annual New Year's conference. With a new format, mystical physician Dr. Christine Page, author of Spiritual Alchemy, How to Transform Your Life, hypnotherapist Barbara Lane, Ph.D., Venture Inward columnist Jerry Lazarus, Feng Shui expert Peggy Cross, ASID, and others help you keep your soul's deepest spiritual resolutions for a more prosperous and fulfilling 2011. From January 28th to the 29th, Kabbalah, a resource for soulful living. John Van Auken guides you on an in-depth journey through the timeless and powerful teachings with new insights into the mystical Kabbalah. From February 18th to the 20th, The Key, Unlock Your Psychic Abilities, an advanced psychic development intensive. To learn more about these and other upcoming conferences, go to edgarcaycee.org. That's edgarcaycee.org. Click on Events, and then click on Conferences. Now it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose, who has a new CD out, titled Developing Your Intuition. She also has a new class about spiritual frequency that helps people to move into the moment. You can find out more at kimmyrose.com. That's KIMMIEROSE.com. Well, hello.
Hello.
What's today's thought for the day?
I love this. It's reading 524.2. It is not what one says that counts, but what one is. And I really am putting that one. And the importance of that to me when I feel that is one, who we are within ourselves, and I say selves, ourself, that we are one. And as we are within ourself, we are a mirror reflection to everyone around us. And as we, if we are grace, we are grace to ourselves and others. And we also start to manifest these things. We make manifest these things in our environment. So you can say it, but when you are that and you express it on all levels of your being, it is so much more powerful.
Hmm. It's interesting. When someone's trying to make an argument or prove a point, it's easy for a lot of people to see that when they're just saying something and they don't believe it, they can tell that they're being deceptive, because our body communicates in so many ways, and more than our body, our spirit communicates. So someone can tell if we're speaking and saying something that goes against who we are, because you can't fake, you can't say something and do your body language to go along with it and also make your soul go along with something that you don't believe. So when we say something, it's a lot better for us to say something that is in tune with who we are. And we don't have to say anything. We can be positive without saying something, and somehow people can feel that, which is amazing.
And this is the huge thing. It's setting your intention and mm-hmm. just being that. It's like, what is really your intention? Is the vibration, that's a good way to connect with your frequency. I'm trying to remember the song, What's Your Frequency? It had the words, what's your frequency? And it had a name in there. Is it Kenneth? Mm-hmm. I just remember this song, and it's like, what is your frequency? How do you even know what your frequency is? Well, Edgar Cayce, one of the things he told us to do is get in touch with our yeses and nos. So that's a great way to do that.
Hmm. Well, thanks for reading the thought for the day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Gary Renard for talking to us. Thanks also to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day. And thanks to Allison Ray for her glimpse of the UFO conference. Thanks most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.